I might try recording this whole episode without the big headphones on because it's actually easier to think.
Jeez, I wouldn't even feel like I was podcasting if I didn't have these headphones on. I mean, it's like the uniform. It's like a firefighter going into a burning building without that hat. Like, you gotta have the hat.
Welcome to the Maximize This podcast, the only podcast that is very grateful on this Thanksgiving weekend for Audacity's automatic crash recovery feature.
Man, it's really good that we have that. Otherwise, it would be next week's Maximize This podcast episode. So what are we talking about today?
This week, we're going to be talking about whether or not we should get rid of the Electoral College, things you'll probably do differently as a result of the election, and also a couple of people that Todd and I think you all should know about. I have to tell you a quick update, very quick. Ready?
Okay, yes, I'm ready.
Okay, a week ago, I was in Lithuania, and what I normally do is my last day, I ask, oh, can I extend for another few nights? And they're like, no, you can't. We're sold out. So I looked at buses that are overnight, and I wanted to get to Krakow, but there was no overnight bus that night to Krakow. So I found one to Berlin. It was 16 hours. I'm like, well, 25 euros and no enough to pay for a hotel. So I just bought the ticket. And then I thought, oh, I should take the GRE. And so I signed up for the GRE the following Tuesday. Took the GRE and decided I wanted to go to Greece to volunteer at a refugee camp. So tomorrow I go to Greece. I'm actually going to Lesbos, where there's a new wave of refugees coming in. They're expecting hundreds of thousands more. So I'm going to go volunteer there at the main camp and the main NGO that's still operating. It's called Euro Relief. I'll put a link to it.
Okay.
After 2 weeks in Greece, stop by Lithuania, get my suitcase, other suitcase that I left there, go to LA, help out with family stuff there, go to Chicago, hope to do a couple of days side trip to Minneapolis, if it's possible.
Ooh.
Back to Chicago, and then Caribbean wedding, then India wedding. That's it.
My head is spinning. I need a map. I need one of the Indiana Jones-style maps with like the little red dotted line tracing your path.
Yeah, I know.
It sounds incredible, though. There was a very good NPR story. I think it was This American Life on the Syrian refugee camps. I believe it's precisely in Greece, if not exactly Lesbos, Greece. Mm. I will put a show
note.
Send
it to me.
Yeah, it's This American Life episodes number 592 and 593, which aired earlier this summer. Are we there yet? And you don't have to live like a refugee. I'd be interested to hear if your experience is similar to what they describe, different.
Nice.
Yeah, I listened to them. They're very good.
So the first topic is, should we get rid of the Electoral College? And this is a topic that a lot of our friends have been discussing lately, obviously because Hillary is winning the popular vote, but lost the general election because of the way the college works.
I believe she was 2 million votes up at this point.
That's actually a sticking point that I want to debate, of whether that popular vote is actually a valid way to see what she would have gotten had there not been an Electoral College. But just a very high-level intro. Obviously, the Electoral College was set up by the Constitution in Article 2. And even at the time, there was a debate about whether the president should be elected through a popular vote or this wonky system. And honestly, one of the reasons acknowledged by Madison, who's one of the guys that was debating this issue, was it would be really hard to get consensus on a popular vote proposal because there was a lot of disenfranchisement in the South because of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
So one way to think about that is that it was a very contextual, specific reason for doing it. But another of the key reasons that they set this up this way, I think the history of it, it's really important to think about when we're considering whether or not to abolish it. And if you can read this in the Federalist Papers from Hamilton.
God, I love Hamilton so much. Anything Hamilton says, I believe.
There you go. Good. So you should read all the Federalist Papers. The thing is that it accomplishes the goal to be a federalist country by mixing state-based and population-based government and representation. If you were against a representation electoral-like vote for president, why are you not also against that kind of vote for the Congress? Why are you okay with having a state represented by two senators on one branch of Congress, and then in proportion to the population of the state in the House? I mean, right there, you're also having the same exact issue with the overall popular opinions of this country being represented dually, partly by the state representation, partly by the popular representation. No one's talking about the fact that this is the same setup in Congress, and it's the system on which the Electoral College is based for the exact same reasons. So I'm ultimately starting to argue for the advantages and the reasons that the Electoral College exists. you know, you might argue that an individual in a state that has very small population, you know, still getting so many electoral votes because of the Senate representation, you know, the average impact of a voter in a state like Utah is 4x, four times the impact of a voter in a state like California, just purely on the number of electoral college votes per citizen of that state. The thing is, this prevents an urban-centric country where the only populations that really have influence and representation in the outcome are people that live in the cities. And that is the reason it was set up that way. And I'm going to argue heavily that the populist-based system that everyone seems to want completely loses that advantage. And our country was set up to be this way with states that operate independently and have representation federally. And you're completely taking that away if you make it a popular vote. There's additional reasons which we can get into, but the very first fundamental question is, you know, why? Tell me, what's your case? I'm assuming you might be on the side, Todd, where you don't want the Electoral College. But what's the case that is important enough to counter the loss of this federalist state system that you'd get by making a popular vote?
I don't even have to make any arguments. Like, you've made most of my points for me and already countered them. So I guess we can just sort of wrap this topic up. We're ready to go.
All right, great.
Well done. Good show.
I have more.
You have more?
No.
You have more of my arguments that you're then going to counter, and then we can be on our way.
No,
please go ahead.
Oh, all right, fine. And because I want you to counter this. And the last thing is that saying that Hillary won the popular vote is actually a completely invalid statement. Because the people who came out to vote as a function of whether or not their vote counted. So Republicans in California feel much more disenfranchised than Republicans in swing states. So you're going to have a number of Republicans in California that did not come out to vote just because their vote didn't count. Once you actually have a popular vote-based system, all of those Republicans are going to come out more. You're going to have a lot less disenfranchisement, which I agree is a benefit of popular vote system. But saying that Hillary's quote-unquote popular victory happened is not accurate because it doesn't actually reflect what a popular vote would have been. We have no way of knowing who would have won an actual straight popular vote election.
Okay, let me jump in here because you've said a lot of great things.
Okay, jump in.
Number one, I totally agree with you that I think all discussion about Clinton winning the popular vote, quote-unquote, is meaningless. There is no way to really know what the popular vote would be for exactly the reasons that you listed. Like, how many people decided to vote or not vote or vote third party based on the realities of the Electoral College system in their state, right?
Right.
So there's no disagreement here. I also would like to just point out, while I'm unhappy with the results, I don't know how many of these people would be calling for us to revisit the Electoral College had Clinton won the Electoral College and Trump won the popular vote by 2 million votes. So,
oh, I am so glad that you pointed that out. The same party that had this situation two elections in the last 20 years happens to be the one pushing for the system change.
Well, that's not surprising, but I will acknowledge that as well.
So you're not going to take a con position, are you? I really expected you to give me a laundry list of reasons that popular vote would be better than Electoral College as a system for picking the president.
My reasons for not wanting the Electoral College is that the Electoral College does not do the things that you are outlining that it does. And those things being protecting small states or like reflecting the views of small states or of making sure that the will of the people is enforced. The Electoral College does not accomplish either of those two goals. And I can outline why that is.
Why is that? The first one, isn't it structurally, just by the nature of the number of delegates appointed per state, structurally that's taken care of, where smaller states have more representation. So I would disagree with that first point.
Okay, so how many states do you think you need to win the Electoral College?
Oh, yeah, I've seen this. If you have the 10 right states and you could win the Electoral College.
The number of states you would need to win for the Electoral College, you're right, it's 11 states.
Mm.
So the Electoral College provides no protection for small states because all you have to do is target the big states and you're done. So there's no protection there for small states. If you had a system, something like you need to win a majority of the states, that would be something that would be more in line with the principle of protecting the states. Not that I would necessarily agree with it, but if you go back and look at, I actually ran the numbers on this, it was pretty interesting. The popular vote has been different from the Electoral College 4 times. If you go just by a majority of states, you'd only be different than the Electoral College twice.
Right.
So what I'm saying is that here is a system that does actually do what people who like the Electoral College say it does, but it actually does it.
Does it better.
Yep.
And it actually drifts further away, though, from the popular vote So it actually isn't addressing the current complaint about Electoral College being far from popular vote. It goes the other way. That's interesting.
Yep, that's a philosophical difference that we can discuss. But if a person who says I like the Electoral College because it protects the small states, it doesn't protect the small states.
It is a balance. It's attempted to be a balance between protecting the small states and overall just plain popular vote. I mean, look at it this way. There's one extreme that's just popular vote, and there's another extreme that's just one vote per state, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
So the Electoral College currently does a mix of the two. Now, maybe it does not protect them as much because only 100 out of the 538 are from this number of states. So maybe that should go up. But the point is you can also win the Electoral College only collecting these small states and not going into the big ones with a couple of big ones and a lot of small ones. And that's where you get a low percent of the popular vote too, but a large number of states. That is good. So there's some protection.
That's the flip side where I think it's, yeah, like you said, 22% of the population. If you just target exclusively these small states, you can have 22% of the people override the other 78%. So I feel like it doesn't offer people any protection too. And then at the end of the day...
Well, no, because your system with the just one vote per state would have the same result.
I'm not advocating for that system, by the way.
Okay. You said the Electoral College doesn't give any state balance. I'm saying it does more than straight popular vote.
The last thing that the Electoral College has in it is that at any time, you have 538 unelected people who could, for whatever reason, decide, you know what, the heck with this result, we're going to vote something totally differently.
Well, within the regulation of the individual state, but yeah. You're saying it's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing, and for the most part, it has never been used. The important thing about this has now been going around the social media, is that this might be an applicable time for them to exercise their ability to change their vote away from the popular vote of the state, because, and this is from the Federalist Papers, they said the process of election with Electoral College affords a moral certainty that the office of president will never fall to the lot of any man who is not in an eminent degree endowed with the requisite qualifications.
That's Hamilton for you.
It says, talents for low intrigue and the little arts of popularity may alone suffice to elevate a man to the first honors in a single state, but it requires other talents to establish in the esteem and confidence of the whole union. The idea that someone that's just a populist rises up, this set of representatives could recognize that and do something about it. And that's what right now you hear liberals trying to encourage and petition Electoral College to do, because they think that's what's happened.
I think it is decidedly unlikely that that will happen.
I agree. There's a couple of people that have said that they're going to switch their vote. Not enough, I'm sure.
What's the difference? It's 309 to 220 something.
306. We need about 40 to switch.
Yeah, seems unlikely.
A last interesting tidbit is it isolates state-level corruption in the voting process. I don't know if you think that's a big deal, maybe not, but if you have a horribly corrupt state and all of the votes swing one way because of the state-level corruption, it isolates how bad that impact can be by not making it straight popular.
And that carries a little bit of weight, but even in a national vote, you would still have the various states running their own elections. And so they would still all be responsible for, you know, identifying sources of fraud. And we have a court system, like federal level courts for handling those things. So that doesn't really bother me. I did want to ping off of one thing you said. I think you mentioned earlier that one of the benefits of the Electoral College was that it prevents urbanism dominating the electoral mm-hmm. vote, where people are just appealing to the needs of urban folk and not the rural parts of the country. I don't think that that is a valid reason for why the Electoral College was started in the first place, because the number of people living in cities in the country in 1790 or whenever it was like 5%. So, I mean, the country was an agrarian country.
It could well be that they, first of all, anticipated how the country landscape would change.
Possibly. My second question would be, what do you think is the urban population rate of the country right now?
What's urban? Does suburban count as urban or?
Urban areas. So, I mean, it would probably count suburbs as well. Like if you're connected to a, you know, close to a large city.
70-30?
80-20.
That was the next guess I was going to give.
So when I hear arguments that like, oh, it prevents, you know, urbans from running over rurals, I'm like, this is an urban country at this point. And so the preferences of the people living in the cities should be given some additional weight because they're the ones that are having to live with the...
Okay, what you just said is that the will of the majority should dominate over the will of the minority. But isn't that the exact opposite of what liberals espouse in protecting minority groups? How is that different? Do you hear what I'm saying?
No, I hear what you're saying. And I'm saying there's a difference between protecting individual rights and deciding the institutions that are going to manage our society. Right? Like, I can understand that a person who lives in a rural environment, you know, doesn't need to care so much about health services for the poor or the homeless, because in those communities, they do have notionally a better system in place for church groups or individual private people to handle taking care of those challenges. Whereas in the cities, those solutions are just not up to the task. And so when you say weighting more, giving more weight to rural votes, in that case, like the rural votes, that's not the situation that the majority of the country is living in. And the same goes for a lot of different...
Well, the important thing is not to marginalize it, to make sure it's represented rather than completely ignored. That's the point.
Right.
Not to say that they should have the dominant voice in the policymaking. Just because you only have 10% experiencing something, if you didn't have some level of protection to them, they would probably never get anything that they needed. And it's a protection against that situation.
I think that with a large number of the laws in our country being not federal level, but state and local level laws, they still have a large amount of autonomy in the way that they conduct their affairs and picking the policies that best suit their individual situations. But when it comes to making federal policy, I'm okay with having federal policies that are aligned with the majority of the country. Like, this isn't a left versus right thing. This is the things that you need to make cities function.
You need cities and rural areas to function. Think about how much of our farmland is rural, how much of our food sources, mining, anything related to natural resources comes from the rural parts. So if you really governed only according to what cities needed, then you could cause serious problems with the economy and with, you know, food and resource infrastructure.
We have what, like 1% of the population is actively involved in food production?
Yeah, exactly. They need to be represented.
I think everyone wants to eat, though. Like, I don't think we need to worry about...
But they're so close to the problems. Those people in those regions understand what the issues are. And when you have somebody in the center of an organization way far away from the problem trying to legislate for it, they're going to get things wrong, as I've seen in any large organization. That's the reason that you need to make sure you explicitly are seeking the voices of these smaller groups that don't necessarily have as big a voice. Mm-hmm. Whether it's civil rights or legislating for how people can live in the country. I think the point that we're arguing is how much is representation of lower population groups important in legislating or creating a voice to the president. And again, like I said, if you really believe straight popular vote for president, then why do we even have a Senate? Why do we have a Senate where each state gets a specific representation? So I think the argument is fundamentally how much should minority groups be represented? We can get into it, but I think we're running out of time.
We are. We're never going to agree on this either. I hear your strong support of the federal system. And
I'm just arguing that by lemma, you cannot say that we should just go to democracy. You have to prove it to me. I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't have a strong opinion on it yet. But the simple reasons that I hear for it are not good enough. That's what I'm saying.
Fair enough. I appreciate wanting to maintain systems of local governance. I don't think that that should go away.
I'm glad we agree on that. In summary, Electoral College, designed for very specific reasons. The balance of representing a large number of people versus smaller sets of people in states that may otherwise lose their voice is something to think about. And I think the answer is not clear. I think we don't even agree on what are the basic tenets to push for. So how do we agree on a better system?
I think the Electoral College as it stands right now does a tenuous job of balancing the needs, supposedly, of the states and the people.
I would argue to add some protections.
It certainly does put its finger on the scales. People campaign differently and people vote differently with it in place than they would if it were not. So it definitely has an impact, but it's debatable whether it has the level of protections that its advocates often believe it does.
We'll see if Republicans push for changing the Electoral College system if in the next election they win the popular vote but lose the Electoral College. Next topic.
Yes.
What are things that you, Todd, might do differently as a result of the election? And I want to hear your thoughts on this first, because you probably are going to do some things different. This is on the top of your mind, whereas I think I'll continue.
You may not.
I don't know. But why don't you go first?
Well, one of my takeaways from the recent election was that it is not prudent to take things for granted, that no result is guaranteed, and that it is important to be involved in your political process, and that politics is not something that just happens every 4 years or even 2 years, that there is a lot going on during that intervening time where people can have an impact. So this has been a rallying call for me to get more politically involved, both locally and at a national level, with the political process. So number one, I've started calling our elected representative.
Oh, great.
It doesn't matter whether my elected representatives agree with me or not. They need to hear what my opinion is so that they know that there are people who are paying attention to the process and are watching how they are acting in this brave new world that we are living in. So that's number one. Number two is I've looked at realigning our charitable donations to better align with the groups that I feel will be at risk in the coming years. So Planned Parenthood, ACLU, Southern Poverty Law Center, and just because I love technology, the Electronic Frontier Foundation as well.
You love technology, huh? What?
I love
technology. I hate artificial intelligence. People's misperceptions.
You use it every day.
I keep trying to influence you on it.
You use it every day.
I know. And it drives me nuts. Every day I get frustrated by how it is incorrectly implemented or misleads you.
Well, hopefully with some more money to the EFF, they will protect your rights to technology or not technology as you see fit. And then the last thing, because a lot of the problems in our system are structural, I've looked at affecting change not through the people that I vote for, but through changing our voting process. So I think, as I discussed many, many times, Maine had a referendum to implement ranked choice voting in their state, and that passed in this recent election, which I'm thrilled about. And so there is a similar movement in Minnesota called Fair Vote MN, which is looking to do the same thing. And so I'm hoping we can use the Maine model for drafting a referendum for implementing the same ranked choice system in Minnesota.
Are you also going to campaign in California to have them secede from the union, since you have lots of friends over there?
I am not, because I think that is ridiculous on so many levels.
You should also help petition states to join this growing group. You may want this. I don't know. There's a growing group.
The National Popular Vote Interstate Compact? Yes, I'm fully in favor of this.
Yes! Thank you. Okay. Which is?
The National Popular Vote Interstate Compact is a agreement among states that say that they will allocate their electoral votes based on the winner of the popular vote and not as a result of the vote within their state.
Exactly. Which means, let's say we're Florida, and let's just say that Trump wins in Florida. But the popular vote of the entire country is tabulated to be pro-Clinton. Florida would actually vote all of its electoral votes for Clinton, even though its direct citizens voted for Trump.
Right.
And they're only going to do it if half of the electoral states worth of states agree to do this. And so far, 10 states have already agreed and joined the pact, plus D.C., which is currently 61% of the 270 that they need. So actually, I think it might happen.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. I'll add that to the list of things that I will investigate.
Oh, yeah.
Supporting. So.
But so far, it's only been strong blue states, which, I mean, obvious, they're the ones that are upset about this. So, I mean, it may not actually make a difference because they're all going to vote blue anyway, but we'll see.
We'll see.
I'm glad I gave you our thing to.
It was on my list. So, but yeah, my takeaway is that we cannot be complacent, that these things that we think could never happen can actually happen. And if we're not on guard for them and actively resisting them, then they might happen. So.
All right. Well, I really need to respond to that. My takeaway is that these things that people think can't happen, they think they can't happen because they don't understand them and they don't look for them and they don't pay attention to signs that they're there. And they are afraid of them and fighting them because they don't fully understand how they might be more benign than they expect. So the thing I'm hoping people do differently, rather than fighting each other more and advocating for their side even harder, is to take a lot of efforts to listen to the other side and understand it better. You can do whatever you want. You can do what you feel is necessary to be a better citizen. And you have a very strong set of values that you're acting according to. And I admire that a lot. My values personally are to help people understand each other when I see that they're both misinterpreting the other side. And so hopefully both of those will happen on all sides. Do I predict that people will do this more? I don't know. I'm very skeptical.
I hear what you'll be doing differently is trying to build bridges among people with reconcilable differences.
things probably do differently. You're basically saying you're going to get more involved.
Yes.
I'm saying, I hope people listen more. I'm going to try to listen more before I start trying to add information and convince when there's emotions involved. Because that's one of my downfalls. I don't always pause to let someone fully just let out how they're feeling. So I want to do that more. I am going to continue to advocate to people that they should not rely on algorithms to give reliable conclusions. And so any improvements in fake news detection, I will call out the holes. And any over-reliance on polls, I will keep trying to push people to be careful.
I think we're all a little gun-shy about polls from now on, but I think we have that on the topic list for things to talk about in the future.
I bet, but in 4 years, and there's going to be a year of build-up to the election just like now, and then the polls are going to come in and everyone will be saying, oh, be careful, remember what happened last time, let's caveat, but I bet they'll still fall into the same trap. People just get emotionally pulled in. They'll still be shocked if it's way off.
Not me.
Really?
I'm going to spend every day thinking that my candidate is going to lose if I don't work. Every day. This cannot happen again.
So Todd, as a result of the election, I hear you're basically going to push more for what you believe in and not listen to it. Good. Awesome.
I am going to get more involved in the political process advocating for my beliefs.
Good. And I'm going to try to change your beliefs. Which is not new. I'm going to change nothing.
You've changed my beliefs before.
Have I? You've probably changed some of mine too. Or added, informed.
Right. That's what I look for. Is I look for information from alternative perspectives, like the experiences and perspectives that you have had add information to my worldview, right? Like All of us only get to live a tiny sliver of life.
Right.
And it's so important to get other people's perspectives so that you can see what life is like for other people. And that is something I will never stop doing.
I totally agree. I hope you don't. I won't either. So maybe the new thing that I will do is really continue trying to do what you do, which is reach out for other perspectives without judgment. And I think you're a really good role model for me in that. One last thing you forgot to say is that as a result of the election, you are going to, for once, read a Breitbart article, the one I sent you. Be very informative.
That's okay. A thing I can do. That's a sacrifice I'm willing to make in this world.
You can even link it in the show notes if you want.
Yes.
Now that all the election excitement is behind us, we want to kind of turn to a different topic. Todd and I like to share with each other people that we've read about or find interesting or find inspirational or people that we feel others should know about. And so we're going to each pick a person that we are going to share with each other and kind of tell them a little bit of background about this person and why they're important and what kinds of things that they've done.
So you have your person that you want to share. Who is this person?
Right. I have my person who I want to share. But just because I like to make things unnecessarily complicated, I'm going to make you guess who it is.
You should get that printed on a business card, by the way. Dynapolicus. I like to make things unnecessarily complicated.
That'll be my new business card. Currently says social entrepreneur. I think this is better.
Okay, go for it. I'm ready for this. I'm ready for this quiz.
I'm going to first start by describing to you a number of hobbies and interests that this person has. And then maybe you can guess who it is. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. This person loves judo, rides horses, likes whitewater rafting, likes swimming in very, very cold rivers. He enjoys tranquilizing tigers and polar bears with tranquilizing guns, rides a motorbike. He has co-piloted a firefighting plane to dump water on a raging fire, shoots darts at whales for eco-tracking, drives a race car, scuba dives at archaeological sites, and he has attempted to lead endangered cranes in a motorized hang glider. Fascinating, right?
I was going to say Vladimir Putin until you said tranquilizing darts, and Putin would never tranquilize anything when a real bullet would do just as well.
Dang it. How did you know? That's right.
It is actually Putin?
Yes.
I suppose the statement that he's tranquilized tigers does not preclude him also shooting tigers. So wait, the mystery person that I need to know about is Vladimir Putin. Okay, go for it. Sell me on this one.
How did you guess from judo, horses, and rafting, and cold rivers?
You know, there's that like I don't even know if this one is Photoshopped. Maybe this one isn't Photoshopped, but there's that picture of Putin like riding bareback on a horse with no shirt on that's sort of iconic. And I don't even know if it's a real photo or not. I really want it to be real because that would be hilarious. But yes, that's as soon as you started saying riding horses, that was the image that flashes into my mind, which perhaps says more about my psyche than I want to confess on the air. But go ahead.
As you know, he is the current president of Russia.
He is the president of Russia, yes.
Now, I mean, I'm assuming in this segment, you kind of assumed it would be somebody who you didn't already know. But in this case, I'm bringing it up because I'm looking at him from a different perspective now than I used to. And I kind of just wanted to share that. So obviously, being a Lithuanian immigrant and having watched and followed the fall of the Soviet Union very, very closely when I was young, we have sort of, you know, this tension when we thinking about the Soviet Union and Russia in particular, because it was the lead of the Soviet Union. So I've been pretty biased against anything related to Russia and, or specifically Russia's government for a long time. But then one day I started pulling up some YouTube videos of Putin. Like I realized, first of all, I was very much tied him personally to the notion of this aggressive Russia Soviet Republic. But actually all the awful things, like, you know, Stalin killed, they say, 20 million people, including starvation, various other means throughout his lifetime. And that's the Soviet Union of the past. He, you know, Putin is a very different person, and he's not running the same government that was there in the past. So I have to listen to my own words of advice and judge him independently without confirmation bias and assuming I knew nothing about him and build up and not start with a bias against him. So something leads me to Putin, and then I watched another video, it's called something about the best Putin jokes. And I thought maybe these would be jokes about Putin, but it's actually Putin in various speeches making jokes or being lighthearted. Immediately upon watching this, when I started watching it, I realized that the only vision of Putin I've ever seen, which added to my confirmation bias against the Soviet Union and Russia, the only images I've seen are of him being mean and angry. Why? Because we're in the US and usually the context of him that we see is something related to us. And whenever he deals with the US, he's defensive and he's more aggressive. So I'm thinking, okay, let's think of a perspective of this person who I'm seeing in these other interviews and telling jokes and laughing and answering questions in a very intelligent, straightforward manner. And I'm like, he cares about Russia. His goal in life is not to demolish the US, whereas our politicians is really trying to mount this monster of this enemy that we can all unite behind. And Putin even makes this point. We all think that Putin does that with the US, but if you're a Russia leader and you look at what the US is doing, and it's pretty strong dominant power in the world and trying to control everything and doing things against our interests if we're Russia, then of course you're going to try to stand up against it and you're going to see it as an enemy. So whereas the US perceives Putin making up that the US is an enemy, it's because we, the US, don't think of ourselves as an enemy because we're American. So, of course, we think that he's making it up, but it's not necessarily true. We actually are offensive against Russia. So, seeing him in a context where he just came across as a person who's thoughtful and probably caring and, you know, and has good relationships with people in the audience, with young people, with other leaders, to the extent that he tries. So, while there's, I'll give you a few data points about him, but while there's obviously things that he's done that, you know, he's threatening my country, Lithuania, and with 40,000 troops on the border, and he's tried to annex Georgia and taking over Crimea and all those things. But there's a version of the story from their point of view, from Russia's point of view and Putin's point of view, that is far more benign than the version that we hear in the US. So, any questions yet?
I applaud you for taking a hard look at someone who would be perceived as an enemy from multiple perspectives and trying to unearth the motivations that that person might have for their actions that maybe doesn't get coverage in American media. And that's about all I have to say about that.
It's a great reaction. The thing is, look, when I'm judging somebody and trying to figure out what their motivations are, and I have a lot of experience doing this, especially in business and in negotiating even day-to-day stuff, and you kind of try to understand what's going on in a person's mind. And you look at how they react to questions, you listen to how the language changes in response to different kind of questions. You look at their body posture, you listen to their tone, and there's a huge difference between how he talks and his tone and the words he chooses when he's talking about the US or to the US versus all of these other scenarios in these clips where he's just being questioned as a leader. I mean, he's put in the position of an adversary whenever he's dealing with the US. And unfortunately, he takes a defensive and aggressive tone when he does that. Maybe there's a reason that all the Russians, a lot of Russians love him, or at least historically did. And I start to see that when I looked at these videos. So I'm not saying ignore what he's doing militarily. I'm not saying he's not crossing a line, but I think it's interesting to see a one-dimensional, quote-unquote, enemy as a more complex human being.
I will completely agree with the notion that we should imagine people complexly, borrowing heavily from a philosophy that the Vlog brothers espouse. I think that's a great perspective on life.
And I strongly encourage people to do the same when it comes to political candidates. It's the same exact thing.
I have no argument here. I think people are complex, and have trying to burn them down to simple motivations and actions is a disservice. In the spirit of this segment, is there, like, should we share in the show notes this video that you saw that provides a new angle on Putin's personality?
Yeah, I will definitely share in the show notes, and I recommend watching it to the end because some of the better parts come out a bit later.
I presume it's subtitled?
Oh, yeah. Was it subtitled in Lithuanian or English? I'll make sure it's subtitled in English.
Subtitled in Lithuanian, we're going to need a translation.
So who's your person?
My person is perhaps lesser known, but I think someone who is very good at explaining things in a clear way that maybe you haven't thought about before, and provides a new perspective on a lot of aspects of everyday life that I think would be beneficial to learn about.
Okay.
That person is CGP Grey. Have you heard that name before?
That's a lot of letters.
It is a lot of letters.
I've heard that name from writing his name down in our outline for today's podcast.
CGP Grey is a London-based YouTuber. He used to be a physics teacher in London, but as a side job, he started making these sort of educational YouTube videos. He talks about elections, he talks about geography, he talks about the influence of technology on our society. And they're delivered in this very like sparse animated style with like a rapid-fire kind of delivery of the topics. But they're very interesting, and they're usually about something that you haven't thought about, or you haven't thought about it in that way before. Unfortunately, the videos come out sort of rarely, like maybe once a month. But for anyone who's never heard of him before, there's an enormous backlog of videos that he's produced in the past that make for incredibly informative and entertaining viewing. So before you head down that rabbit hole, make sure you have your afternoon clear, as it was, because it is very addictive, and you'll find yourself going from video to video very quickly.
I'm intrigued. How long are the videos usually, and how many are there?
I couldn't tell you how many there are. I want to say there's probably at least 50 by now. And they range in length from the shorter ones are maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And then he has a couple of longer ones that are maybe 15 or 20 minutes. I think his most popular one, and one that I would recommend to everyone, is one called Humans Need Not Apply. It's his presentation of the sort of underappreciated role of robotics and artificial intelligence in the job market, and the growing presence of those factors, and some of the likely consequences it will have for our country and our planet over time.
Like lots of crashes and humans assuming AI does things it can't, and then world wars initiated by robots?
Yeah, strangely, he doesn't get into that stuff. He doesn't talk about that. But maybe if you sent him an email, he would include it in the second version.
I was actually thinking I should ask him if I can work for him. I just added him to my list of people to ask for a job.
He recently hired an animator, so some of his animations have gotten a little better in the recent videos, although they are still in the same sort of sparse style. But I've found it really intriguing. Like, he has a really good series on elections. I mean that in terms of like voting systems, you know, the different ways in which a voting system can result in different outcomes for an election, and why some are preferable to others. He has this entire series that simulates some elections in the animal kingdom and how...
In the animal kingdom?
Yeah, in the animal kingdom.
There are
elections? You have different candidates represented by tigers or by monkeys or by snakes or whatever. It's very cleverly done, and I...
Oh, okay. Not actually monkeys having their own elections like in Planet of the Apes.
No. This is all stylized stuff.
Which I just watched last night and the night before.
Yeah, but... Okay. I've really enjoyed it. He has a couple of podcasts also, which I listen to, which are also very informative. He does the Hello Internet podcast with Brady Haran and the Cortex podcast with Mike Hurley. The Cortex one is actually really interesting too, because it talks about, he does a lot of productivity stuff. He walks through his creative process and a lot of the systems that he has in place for how he gets things done in his day-to-day life. And I found it incredibly enlightening and a good inspiration for a lot of the systems that I've incorporated into my life. So there's another thing that he has his hands in that is truly excellent. So I'll put links to all this in the show notes, but I can't get enough of this guy. It's unfortunate that his stuff comes out sort of infrequently, but it's always of extremely high quality. So it's worth waiting for. So CGP Grey, he's great. You should listen to his stuff, watch his stuff. That's all I have to say about that.
So thanks for listening. We have a discussion page running on Facebook at facebook.com/maximizethis, as well as one on Reddit, reddit.com/r/maximizethis. Feel free to add your perspectives, share ideas for future topics, argue with us, whatever you want.
And check out our website. That's www.maximizethis.fm. You can always find the latest episodes there, along with news, new episodes, and bonus features. And as always, please tell your friends about our show.
Und lesen Sie nicht ziemlich gut der Feind des Vollkommenen sein.
I don't even know what that means.
And don't let pretty good be the enemy of perfect.
Do you know what's really interesting?
What's really interesting?
This is our 10th episode.
Our 10th episode.
We have recorded 10 episodes. We have aired 10 episodes. God. We've recorded many more. Some of which may or may not see the light of day.
Yeah. I mean, that makes us almost professional, right? How many episodes do we need in order to become really good at this?
I'll check that. I'm sure NPR has some guidelines as to what makes your podcast professional. I'll see if 10 is enough.
Okay, good. Let's talk about that and regroup.
All right. Congratulations.
You too. Congratulations.